tell my girls that I don't focus too much on other teams. I want to focus on what we're doing, and as long as we do what we're supposed to do, you know, whatever happens, happens. But we're going to still continue to work on our defense and being disruptive and getting our hands in passing lanes and getting our hands on the ball and not letting teams just do whatever they want. And I think if we can play that way, that really kind of sparks our offense.
That's Leah Bergman, head coach of the St. John's Tipton Lady Blue Jays, as they play Hill City tonight, makeup games. Dusty will have the call for you from Hill City tonight on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. And then we'll have more basketball for you tomorrow night on Tuesday. Southeast Saline at Beloit, big doubleheader there in league play on KD Country 94. And St. John's Tipton Lakeside tomorrow night from Downs on Z96.3 a lake. And all of that information is posted at ncksports.com. There are some makeup games tonight besides St. John's Tipton at Hill City. Smith Center's at Superior, Nebraska tonight. Wilson's at Southern Cloud. And Russell is at Ellenwood. For the latest girls and boys substate basketball standings, those are posted at ncksports.com. Also, the Phillipsburg Panther wrestling results are posted as well at ncksports.com. All right. KU basketball over the weekend as the Jayhawks get a win over the TCU Horned Frogs.
Back come the Hawks, a lob to Doak and a two-handed dunk. And there it is, a career high in assists for Dotson. And it may be a career best in dunks for Doak.
Wow. Dotson with the 9 assists as KU wins against TCU. Bill Self, mixed reviews.
That's about as bad as we can play offensively. And probably about as good as we can play defensively. I mean, we didn't have, other than Doak, we really didn't have any offense at all. Our best offense was in a long time, if I can say that, was our defense. Our defense led to probably 12 or 14 points offensively, which we hadn't been getting. But our shooting and passing today, wow, we got to get better. And then we didn't close the game out great late. But it was a good win, and I'm proud. And if you told me before the game started we win by 14, I'd say, wow, we must have played great. But we did on one end.
Jayhawks win 60-46 at TCU. They keep pace with Baylor. Baylor winning over the weekend as well, as the Bears ranked number one in the land, and they'll still be number one. New polls come out. They beat Oklahoma State in Waco 78-70. Texas Tech wins in Austin against Texas 62-57. Oklahoma with the upset at home over West Virginia, 69-59. And Kansas State goes to Ames and loses 73-63. Once again, K-State with that very slow start, digging themselves a big hole. Then they battle. They try. Good effort. You like that, but still, the end result is the same. Cardi Ajayi got the start for K-State, as Bruce Weber really basically, I guess, felt sorry for him because Fran Finchilla was being critical of him. I don't quite fully get it, other than I guess he said that Jada decided I want him to start, and so Jada scored points, but here's Weber on Jada.
That's why I started him. I said, it's your chance. Go out there and do play. But he's still got to be better, you know, if we're going to win. He had good numbers, but still got to be a little better, make some better reads. I thought early we didn't make very good reads. They blocked nine shots. I think it was 7 at halftime. And that means when you're driving, if they're coming, that means somebody's got to be open and you got to make the right read. And I thought that was, when you asked about the beginning of game, that was part of the problem also, beside the turnovers.
So K-State will be back in action on Tuesday. They'll host Oklahoma State at 8 o'clock on ESPNU. KU back in action, big game at Morgantown. Take on West Virginia at 6 o'clock this Wednesday. Pregame at 5:30 on your home for the Jayhawks, North Central Kansas City, 96.3 The Lake. Wichita State went down to Houston and really rather have not gone. They were beaten 76-43. It was the worst loss since 2003. It's the worst loss in the Greg Marshall area. And Quentin Grimes, former Jayhawk, led the way in a balanced attack for Houston with 14 as Houston paced the Shockers by 33. Greg Marshall trying to figure it all out.
It was one of the most thorough whippings we've had in my career. It's disappointing. You know, I don't know how to explain it, honestly, at this point. Can't get anything from them. You know, the only thing I can point to is the two heartbreakers in a row. Kind of deflates you, but you can't have that carry over, especially against a team like Houston. I mean, they'll play so hard, and not only will they fight you and scratch and claw and maybe even go a little beyond that to win, they'll make shots, they make plays for one another, and you know, in the end, they look bigger and better, and they want to win more.
Well, that's the bad news. The good news is a former Shocker is kicking butt in the NBA. Fred VanVleet, who he is one of my favorite players, was at Wichita State. Loved the way he played. He's a tough dude, and Kawhi Leonard leaves Toronto, so the Raptors are going to fall apart. We tried to tell people when the NBA season started, the Raptors are still going to be good. I mean, they've got talent. Kawhi, they were 17-5 when Kawhi didn't play last year. So that tells you they got good players. Van Fleet has to step up. He has this year. He had 29 points and 6 assists the other night in a win over the Nets. And the Raptors quietly have won 14 in a row. That's a franchise record. They're now 38-14 on the season. Everybody talking about the Bucks being unbeatable in the East. Don't forget about the reigning Eastern Conference champion and NBA champion, Toronto Raptors. Without Kawhi Leonard, everybody just wrote him off. And Van Fleet's having a decent season. He's averaging 18 points, 7 rebounds, 2 steals per game, all career highs. He's shooting 40% from 3, and he's been providing great leadership, defense, outside shooting. He's a collective package. He's a great player, good teammate, and the former Shocker is doing good things there in the NBA with the Toronto Raptors. Devontae Graham, former Jayhawk, is going to be participating in the three-point shootout at the NBA All-Star Game. So maybe a reason for you Jayhawk fans to watch the NBA All-Star Game or the festivities the night before and see Devontae Graham participate in the three-point contest. Wild game over the weekend. I didn't have a chance to see it, and I don't like Duke, so I probably wouldn't enjoy it anyway. Duke winning at the buzzer against North Carolina because North Carolina just finds ways to lose games this year.
On the way. No. Long rebound tapped out, controlled by Goldwire. Jones with 3, with 2 for the win. No, tapped up by Moore, and in at the buzzer. Moore banks it in, and the Blue Devils win it. 98-96. Trey Jones and Mike Krzyzewski embrace, and it's a Duke Blue kind of night in Chapel Hill.
North Carolina had a 99.1% chance of winning when they led 77-64 with 4 minutes to go. They're up 13 or 4 minutes ago at home against Duke. Duke's best player had fouled out, Vernon Carey Jr. And how do you lose a game in the final 4 minutes up by that many? Well, you miss a lot of free throws. North Carolina did that. Some turnovers. But here's the thing. North Carolina fouled. Duke misses a free throw on purpose, and then they get the bucket to force overtime. And earlier in the year, North Carolina played Clemson, and they didn't foul up 3, and Clemson hit a 3. So Roy Williams changes his philosophy and decides, okay, I'm up 3, I'm going to foul. So then North Carolina recovers in overtime. They go on 11-1 run. So now they're up by 5 in overtime. So they figured things out. They're up 5 with 20 seconds to go. How do you lose the game? Two of the best players are Duke, even Cassius Stanley. He was out for the final 2:32 of overtime. And once again, what happens? Duke is at the foul line and miss a free throw on purpose. And they're able to force the regulation, and then they get the game winner. And it's just so much that was going on. North Carolina missed 17 free throws on the night. So, yeah. And I don't think they would have missed the free throw on purpose because it was tied, right?
No,
They wouldn't have missed that one on purpose.
No.
But still, they missed it. And then the wild scramble, and then they were able to get a tip-in or lay-in on an air ball at the buzzer. And what a horrible way for North Carolina to lose. They're having a rough year, and they played really well for the most part. And then they lose it on top of it at home is where they lost that game.
Yeah.
I don't know if they can recover from that one. And there have been some wild games this year North Carolina's lost, and Roy Williams might be thinking about retirement right now because this has been a tough year for the Tar Heels. And my son says, how can Carolina even play with Duke? I said, son, forget the records.
Yeah.
It's a rivalry game, man. Rivalry game, and Duke should have lost it. So maybe the wildest one yet between Duke and North Carolina.
There have been some wild ones. Yeah. Austin Rivers, when he made that one, was like eight years to the day.
Capel hit a half-court shot. Yeah. Remember that? Yeah, there have been some nutty games between North Carolina Duke, no doubt. All right, so let's go back since you're now here. The high school basketball tonight, we played a cut from Leah Bergman. Hill City hosting St. John's Tipton tonight. On KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com, Lance Bergman's thought on the matchups with the Hill City team that still has Coach Riley at the helm.
Been Coach Riley's kind of staple is having a good offense that, you know, they usually don't turn the ball over too much and make too many mistakes, so we want to try to get them out of what they like to do. And then they've ran a 1-3-1 against us several times the last few years, so, you know, we've been practicing a little bit about that. We've got to be focused and be able to take care of that.
All right, your thoughts on your matchups tonight on Monday Night Basketball. Yeah, I mean,
you got a girls' game with a team that's 11-3 against a team that's 2-10. But I'm going to tell you right now, throw those records out the window because Hill City plays in a very tough league. They're 2-10, but they've won their last two. They played with Hoxie earlier this season. It's going to be a dogfight, I think, for the St. John's Tipton girls, despite having a much better record than Hill City. And I can say the same thing about the boys' game, too. Hill City 6-7, St. John's Tipton 11-4 coming into tonight. I would think the Blue Jays would probably be the favorites in both games, but it's still about going out there and executing. I wouldn't put a heavy favorite on either one of them tonight, but just go out and play their games. I think they should be okay and be competitive and maybe ultimately find themselves some wins tonight out at Hill City and then get ready to come back to town and go to Downs tomorrow night for more basketball. So it's a busy week for a lot of teams that have makeup games here this week.
Yeah, a lot of teams play three games in a week. Girls and boys both went 3-0 last week. That was a good week. Three games in five days. Some teams played Republic and played 3 and 4 days. So, yeah, we're getting down to the wire. It's like you almost play half your season in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It feels like.
Because next week St. John's Tipton has to play three games again because they have makeup Monday at Lincoln. So.
Right.
And, yeah, there's six games in the next 2 weeks for St. John's Tipton.
If you want to follow the sub-state standings, and some of them are complete. You know, this is the frustrating thing, and I want to give Keisha credit. This is something I started doing way back when I was up in Northeast Kansas with sub-state standings, and nobody provided that.
Yeah.
And so I had people ask me to do sub-states for other teams outside of our listening area.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did as many as I could. I didn't get paid for it, but I did it, and people really appreciate it. And it took a little while to compile all that stuff. Well, finally, Keisha here, I think, last year or two, it listed for every single sub-state. They have the updated standings, and you can click on each individual team. You can see who they beat, who they lost to. It's really nice, but here's the problem with it, and it's nothing that's Keisha's fault at all. It's coaches that are, I don't want to be too rough here, but too lazy, I guess, or too busy, whatever way you want to take it, that they can't, report their score to Keisha so that they can keep it updated.
And it's a school sign-in password. All you got to do is put it in yourself.
All you got to do is put it in.
You just put it in.
It'd take you, 60 seconds maybe?
Yeah.
And there are some, for instance, I went in, I was looking at sub-state standings because I'm getting ready for Beloit Southeast tomorrow night. Southeast boys send theirs in. Everything's updated. Beloit's are all updated. Most of them are, it looks like the boys sub-state standings are updated on both the Beloit sub-state. Looks like it's up to date. Then I checked the Southeast, and the Southeast boys are the 5 seed right now, and they're sub-state at Halstead, and they're 11-4, and they're a 5 seed. So then I go to the girls to see where Southeast lines up, and Southeast girls are 7-4 according to that. Well, I know what the record is. We've got it at ncksports.com. Obviously, a Southeast coach doesn't report that. Yeah. The girls. It's like, why not? It's not like there's some big secret here, you know? I think some coaches are completely paranoid, or they're not organized, which if they're not organized, I don't know how you can be a great coach. I think if you're a great coach, you have to be organized somehow, some way.
Oh, yeah.
And so it is frustrating that, Keisha provides something like that, and then fans want to know, and other teams want to know, and us media member want to know, and pass along to people like, where's everybody standing in sub-state standings? And 7 of 8 schools send in all their results, and everything's updated, and there's one school that apparently thinks it's not important for them to turn it in. Or that part is frustrating, and there's nothing Keisha can do about it. They've done a great job of providing that service that they never used to provide.
Yeah.
And coaches have to, turn that stuff in. And I, over the years, I've been frustrated with, other sports teams. They've complained before. We don't get as much coverage as football or basketball, this or that. And I always said, give us your information. Give us as much information as you can. We'll be happy to put it on there. We can't be everywhere at once.
Yeah.
There's only one of us. We haven't cloned ourselves yet. And so I pleaded to some other teams over the years, whether it be here or where I used to be, pleading with them. Give us the information. Report your scores. And you can't get it.
Yeah.
With some. Now, some are great.
There's a
some are unbelievably
couple
great.
Schools in the NPL that I won't call out.
Yeah.
But it's just like they're black holes.
Yeah.
And,
takes forever to get the
information. Another team's playing them to get, if you want to get their score. If they're playing each other, it's almost impossible.
It's ridiculous. Like, what? So you think you lose that you don't have to report it and it didn't happen?
And I had one where they won by 10 points and I didn't get it for 2 days. And I'm like, what are you doing?
I don't understand that part. I mean, the good thing is the majority of schools and teams do a good job, but there are the few, that the stragglers, I guess you can call it. You know, I'm sure Mike Wallmeyer, head coach of Concordia Girls, didn't want to report the score last night, but he did. Or, well, maybe he didn't. But anyway, Central Plains girls won their 127th game in a row last night over Concordia, who's a 3A school, 79-8.
Yeah.
And Concordia had 49 turnovers and were down 53-0. This is a 3A school playing a 1A school, and the 1A school is doing that to them, because that 1A school could probably win 1, 2, 3, or 4A state.
Yeah.
Maybe compete in 5A and 6A, possibly. I don't know. But yikes. And I feel sorry for anyone that calls a game like that. That's tough to call, especially if you're calling it for the team that's losing.
To call them playing really, really good teams at state.
Yeah, right.
You know, sure, and even then. Do that game, I'm going to pass.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody said, well, they just got to be better at handling pressure and ball handling. Yeah, you know that good teams go up. Phillipsburg is a good team. They just beat Trigo, who was number one team in 2A. Phillipsburg just beat them. Phillipsburg lost by 20, and that was the closest game Central Plains had all year, last I checked. And Phillipsburg is a good team. Central Plains just loaded, and they got a Division I player, and Emily Ryan is going to play at Iowa State. It's easy to say, well, they should just handle the pressure. You have to have the talent and the fundamentals and the players. And Central Plains is stacked.
I saw one comment where it said, if you don't have a shot clock, you don't have to force the action anymore. You should never lose by more than 20. And I'm like,
you still have to
have to inbound the ball.
You have 10 seconds to get it across.
You have to get it across in 10 seconds.
Yes.
If you can't do those two things, Central Plains is going to score a lot of points, and that's how they score their points. They get steals on the baseline.
Yes.
You don't even get the ball in, let alone being able to force the issue or not having a shot clock means absolutely nothing against that team.
Right.
If you can get it across half court, then, I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to force the issue. You can hold the ball if you want.
Sure.
You think you're going to lose to a team like that? You can't get the ball in against a team like that.
But here's the thing, though. Even if you get it across half court and in front court, somebody's pressuring you. You just can't hold on to the ball and hope you have the possession every time.
Yeah, you don't have to force the action, but I guarantee you they are going to, because they know you can't.
Absolutely.
It's like, do you understand what you actually just said in that comment?
Yeah, some people are clueless. Clueless.
Obviously haven't seen Central Plains play when
apparently
you made that comment.
Apparently not. So, that was a rough one. Concordia boys also lost to Central Plains 50-28, so it was a tough trip for Concordia. Didn't score a lot of points in the girls' or boys' games. Let's see. Before we get to Riley, because Riley's going to be on today, tomorrow we got Seren Petro, 810 WHB, a talk Chiefs. Wednesday, Matthew Derrick, a talk Chiefs. And then Thursday, Brian Haney. And then Friday, we'll have a regular show. And we might not have a guest. We may. Who knows? But what or who is the biggest challenge for the Chiefs to repeat as Super Bowl champs?
Like, who's standing in their way?
Let me repeat the question. What or who is the biggest challenge for the Chiefs to repeat?
Oh, okay. I mean, I'd say you still got to deal with, like, the Lamar Jacksons and the Ravens of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'd be at the top of my list in the AFC if they can continue on the path that they're on. And then I think the Chiefs, what for the Chiefs would just be, can you control it and ride the high and not let it bring you down next year, I guess, would be
for me,
my
thing. For me, it's pretty simple. I think the biggest challenge for the Chiefs is complacency.
Yeah.
Because a lot of teams that win it all don't turn around and win it again the next year, and I think it's complacency. I think it's a lack of hunger because you finally climbed the summit. As Mitch Holthus would say, you got to the top of the mountain, and it's hard to get there, but it's harder to stay there. And I think that's the biggest challenge for the Chiefs to repeat. And I agree with you then. I think the second biggest challenge is the Ravens. But Lamar Jackson, I still want to see what he does in a fourth quarter when he's down.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he can make all the throws.
It's
I really don't.
He's got to.
Right. But he did get, he improved quite a bit.
And he did last year, this past year, yeah.
He
so
did.
He can still.
He did
still
improve.
Keep improving,
but
I guess.
But defenses are going to make some adjustments to him next year, too, just like they made adjustments against Mahomes and the Chiefs.
Yeah.
This year as well. And, you know, Chiefs didn't score quite as many points, didn't have as many yards, didn't have as many touchdown passes, things like that. But I think it's health and complacency. I think that's the biggest challenge is the Chiefs themselves. The biggest challenge for the Chiefs to repeat is themselves.
Yeah.
That's what I believe. Because I look at AFC, who else but the Ravens? The Patriots, even if Tom Brady comes back, I'm not super worried about them. The Steelers have Big Ben coming back from elbow surgery, and they have no quarterback in waiting. Not worried about the Steelers. The Bengals might get Joe Burrow. I think it'll take some time, although he could be a stud. The Browns are a mess usually, although they should be improved. But Baker Mayfield, good quarterback, not sold that they're going to be great. The AFC West is complete. That's six wins for the Chiefs. I mean, they beat the Broncos nine times in a row. Four of those were Alex Smith, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Locke, I don't know if he's going to be a superstar. I think he's a good quarterback. I think he could be a really good quarterback. Is that still good enough for the Broncos to contend in the West? I don't think so. Not if the Chiefs are, you know, focused and healthy and not complacent. So, to me, the Chiefs have at least five, if not six, wins in the division right then and there.
Yeah.
Because the Chargers, I think, are going to be a bit of a train wreck. That Philip Rivers will be gone, which they won't throw as many interceptions, but who the heck's going to be their quarterback? Maybe it'll be Tom Brady. Don't know. Raiders, they just can't figure a way to do anything against the Chiefs. They're going to Vegas, so they'll be all pumped up early on all that. But the division's not that great. And you think about when the Patriots have been good for all these years. What's one of the reasons why the Patriots have been good all these years?
Because their division's not good.
Because their division's not good, and they get six wins every year.
Yeah.
And so all they got to do is go find another six or seven, and they got 13-3. And a number one seed and home field advantage in the playoffs. Another reason why the Patriots are pretty good, and I think Mike Greenberg made a good point on ESPN the other day, because they're talking about the Mahomes contract and about an extension, and somebody said, well, should he take less money? And a lot of people go, why would you take less money? But here's the thing. What dynasty have you had in the National Football League really ever since the Cowboys? What dynasty have you had? There's only one.
Patriots.
And why do you think that is? Tom Brady took less money all the time, mm-hmm. so that they had money and flexibility so they could make sure they had a really good team. Now Tom Brady, I think, is going to say, I want my money at the age of 42, which may be a little bit too late from that standpoint. But Brady, he took less money. He wasn't the highest paid quarterback because he was about winning. Mahomes might have to do the same thing. And if he doesn't, him and his agent decide, we want 40 to 45 and we don't want to take less, then that could prevent the Chiefs becoming a dynasty. And I thought Mike Greenberg brought out a great, very good point. Like, you look at these great quarterbacks that got these huge, master, crazy top deals, how have those teams fared? Aaron Rodgers, not so great. And the Packers. You look at Carson Wentz just got a deal. Jared Goff, Rams are suddenly going backwards. I mean, there's not as much flexibility with your cap to spend money elsewhere. So it'll be interesting to see how that happens with Mahomes and the Chiefs as well. But I just don't see him in the AFC that's going to really challenge the Chiefs other than the Ravens. Maybe the Jets with Sam Darnold will be better. The Bills were pretty decent last year with a young quarterback. The AFC, it's a good place to be.
Yeah, and most of those teams are more of the defense is going to slow them down. You're not worried about what they're bringing.
No. And the defense of the Chiefs should be better next year. They make a few moves this offseason and under the system for another year. I think they should be only better.
Yeah.
But where, you know, the hunger and everything else. You know, what do you do with Chris Jones? Kendall Fuller's a free agent, by the way. Rashawn Breeland's a free agent. How do you keep all those guys? Odds are you don't. But you got to find some in the draft or a nice, cheaper free agent signee like you had with Breeland. Maybe that works out for the Chiefs. Or Rashad Fenton steps in and be a starting corner. Maybe that's the answer. I don't know. Here's an interesting statistic. Everybody's caught up in all the comebacks the Chiefs had in the playoffs and the Super Bowl, and rightfully so. But Patrick Mahomes has played in five playoff games, and he's 4-1. His only loss is at home to the Patriots when he never got the ball in overtime. Had he got the ball in overtime, they probably could have won that one too. In four of the five games that Mahomes has played in the playoffs as quarterback of the Chiefs are 4-1. They whip the Colts pretty easily, and then they had the Patriots, and they had the three comebacks this year. Four of the five games that Patrick Mahomes has played in the playoffs, him and the Chiefs have been down by double digits in four of the five games. And every single one of those games, including the three this year that everybody knows about, but people forget about the Patriot game last year, the Chiefs are down 14-0 halftime.
Yeah.
The Chiefs are down by double digits in the second half. Chiefs came back, took the lead. Patriots go down, take the lead. Chiefs would trail, come back, take the lead. And then they came back with a field goal with 30 seconds to go and had to go about 50 yards and did it with one timeout or two timeouts. And, you know, if it didn't come down to a coin flip, Chiefs might have won that football game. So Patrick Mahomes is 4-1 in the playoffs, and four of the five games that he's played in the playoffs, they've been down by 10 or 14 points or 24 in the case against the Texans, and they came back to win all those games except one. And that would have been a win if Dee Ford's wasn't offsides, or the Chiefs could stop him on 3rd and 10, I don't know, once out of four or five times. It's pretty amazing because the Chiefs have only Mahomes has never lost by more than seven in the playoffs or in regular season. And that just goes to show you that next year the Chiefs lose games, they're not going to get blown out unless Mahomes is hurt or something. Mm-hmm. They're going to be in every game, and we see what happens when they get behind. So they do have that sense of urgency at some point. And so even if they start out flat next season, they might steal a game they shouldn't win early in the year when they're not playing their best because they're just that talented.
Yeah. One man has single-handedly exercised the demons of the past of that Arrowhead Stadium during the postseason with these kind of games that you're talking about. It's ridiculous.
It is.
And yeah, I mean, you feel comfortable about it moving forward because he's just not a guy that gets beat.
No.
And if he does, it's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not his fault normally.
No. I mean, think about the Rams game. He put up 51 in that one, and they still lost. I mean, that was like Texas Tech days. Another quick thing before we get to Riley Gates is the more and more I think about the Chiefs, the more and more I think about the Royals in 2015. You know, think about all the similarities. The Royals had to make an unbelievable rally in the eighth inning against the Houston Astros. Houston, yeah. The Chiefs were down 24-0 to the Houston Texans. Yeah. The Royals had Heartbreak Hotel the year before, losing Game 7 of the World Series. The Chiefs' Heartbreak Hotel didn't get the ball in overtime, lost to the Patriots. And that just fueled them for the very next year. The other thing is that the Royals had all kinds of comebacks in the playoffs in 2015 when they did win the World Series. In fact, all four of their wins in the World Series were come-from-behind victories, every single one of them. Remember Game 1 when Gordon had to hit the homer to tie it? Okay, but how about Game 5? Think about this for a second. Another similarity. Game 5, clinching game for the Royals, right? Down 2-0 in New York with Matt Harvey dominating. And then scratch across two runs, Hosmer's mad dash to the plate. They rally. They refuse to lose. And they rallied, put the pressure on, and then they won it in extra innings 7-2 and came home with the World Series trophy. So in the clinching game, they were up against it, right? Yeah. I mean, they still had another game to play. They lost it. But it was a clinching game for a World Series championship. The Chiefs, Super Bowl, obviously it's a clinching game to win a championship. They're down 20-10 with 7 minutes to go, and it's 3rd and 15. And they're in dire situation, and a 57-yard pass, and that's what it was. It was 44 yards, but Mahomes threw it 57 yards on a 3rd and 15 and threw the ball before Tyreek Hill even broke into his route going back to the sideline. I mean, the Chiefs and the Royals are so many similarities between them. But here's the biggest difference. Here's the biggest difference. Is that when the Royals won in 2015, did you think they're going to repeat in 16?
No,
you thought that was it. You made a World Series back to back years.
2 years in a row, and it's just like they got it done.
Johnny Cueto was a rental.
Yeah.
And Zobrist was a rental, and those guys were gone. You didn't keep the band together. And the Royals couldn't. And they're small market, whereas NFL has a salary cap. Baseball does not. So the Chiefs, they have a young quarterback who's still on his rookie deal, and the Chiefs have a lot of the core will be back. And the Royals had a lot of their core back in 16, too, but they didn't have those guys they had picked up, whereas the Chiefs got Frank Clark, Tyrann Mathieu. Yeah. They're signed. They got Kelce signed. They got Hill signed. They got Mahomes signed. They got Fisher signed. Schwartz is signed. The main components of their team, besides Chris Jones and Sammy Watkins, they are signed for the next few years. And like I said, Kendall Fuller and Breland, those are other guys that aren't quite as maybe as important, but they're still important to an extent. But that's where it's different, is that the Chiefs, this wasn't one of those, we better win this year because we're never going to get back. And they may never get back, but they certainly have a great chance. Whereas the Royals, you never really felt like, after 15, you're like, we made it. We avenged our loss the year before. Somehow we made it back, and that's going to be that.
Yeah.
And it was. You know?
The Royals, you had never had any illusions that they could build a dynasty. Baseball, there's not many dynasties anyway.
The only time the baseball can do it is, you know, the Yankees, big market teams are the only ones that can do it.
Yeah.
It's just the way the game's
That's not even happening anymore.
No,
like they think it should. It doesn't.
It's not.
Yeah, there's a huge difference in the future of the two teams compared to the Royals.
So there's a big difference. But still, never in my wildest dreams, if somebody told me back in 2012, do you know, Wade, I'll bet you a $100 bill that the Royals and the Chiefs each win a championship within the next 8 years. And if somebody told me that in 2012 or even 14, like, whatever.
Yeah.
Crazy. So we better enjoy it, Chiefs and Royals fans, because, as I said before, Norma Hunt thought the Chiefs were going to make a Super Bowl a lot when they made it twice in 4 years to start it all. And then she had to wait 50 years for the Chiefs to get back to Super Bowl. So there's no guarantee. So enjoy it as much as you can.
I'm definitely doing that because of what you said. There's not a guarantee that this is going to be what people think it is.
No. Although some Chiefs fans think, well, we won one. Now it's going to be easy.
Yeah.
We got Mahomes. And maybe it will be easy. I don't think it will be easy. But I think they will get more than one with Mahomes. But weirder things have happened. So enjoy it while you got it.
Yes.